But the one topic that I'm probably the most passionate about is really just access to services for all individuals with mental health concerns, not just folks that, you know, are in crisis or need the most dire of services, but people that, you know, may from the outside seem just like you and me, but are really on the inside struggling with something and aren't able to get the help that they need.
Hi, this is Ike Evans of the Hogg Foundation for Mental Health, and you're listening to Into the Fold, the Hogg Foundation podcast. Hogg Foundation is a strategic grant maker based at the University of Texas at Austin. To learn more about the foundation, our history, and our programs, visit us at hogg.utexas.edu, and Hogg is spelled H-O-G-G. The Hogg Foundation recently released its list of policy priorities for the legislative session and beyond. With the 2017 legislative session in full swing, we thought that it would be a great opportunity to drop in on one of our policy pros, Allison Bulware, a policy fellow here at the Hogg Foundation, who will give us a rundown of the mental health policy agenda in front of the legislature. Allison, thanks for joining us.
Thanks so much for having me, Ike.
So let's start with a brief intro. Tell us how you came to arrive at Hogg and how it is that you see your role here.
Sure. So I got my master's in social work at the University of Texas at Austin, and my final semester there at UT, I spent my time interning for former Representative Elliot Neischtat, who represents Central Austin. He also happens to be a social worker and a lawyer, so because he's a social worker and I was studying social work, I interned for him. And while I was there, I worked on several mental health-related bills that he had filed, and I also was staffing the Human Services Committee, of which he was a member. And so I got to really learn more about the mental health system as a lot of those bills went through his committee. Then I was told about this opportunity at the Hogg Foundation to become a policy fellow, and I interviewed, and after the application, was able to luckily be chosen, and then I started here after the session ended.
Okay, and I hope that our listeners won't take it as excessive self-indulgence on my part, just to vouch for what a wonderful addition to our team that Allison has been in the, how long has it been, a year and a half that you've been here?
Yeah, I started in July of 2015.
Yes.
Well, thanks, Ike. I'm happy to be here, and you're great as well.
Oh, yes. Thank you for that. I'm using our current policy priorities to frame this conversation, and it's available on our website, hogg.utexas.edu. Reading down the list top to bottom, we have peer support services, mental health workforce development, mental health and trauma-informed care for individuals with intellectual and developmental disabilities, integrated health care, state psychiatric hospital beds and infrastructure. Quite the tasty word salad. So rather than go through every item, perhaps you could distill for us which of these issues you see moving along the furthest in the session and are having the most traction.
Sure. So there are several bills that have already been filed related to some of the topics that happen to be our priorities. So specifically related to peer support services, there have been a couple of bills filed that would create a Medicaid reimbursable service for peer support services. And there's a lot of support for this bill, both from advocates and consumers, as well as legislators. They're really interested in how certified peer specialists and recovery coaches and others can be used to really help the system in a more cost-effective way than what's currently being done. There have also been several bills filed related to the workforce, and people seem to be recognizing that this is a huge problem. There were also some bills filed related to the mental health workforce last session. So as advocates, we're hoping to build on some of those bills by reminding all of the legislators what's going on, and that this is still a huge problem for folks that are trying to get mental health services. And again, the mental health and, trauma-informed care for individuals with intellectual and developmental disabilities, there's a bill that's been filed related to this as well. So we're pretty lucky in that the topics that we're working on also appear to be the priorities for a lot of legislators as well.
Things at the Capitol are fast moving, and it's hard to predict in advance what things will demand attention and response. And a lot really does depend on the news cycle and whatever it is that just happens to surface in the media. So how much do the policy priorities that, you know, that have been mapped out correlate with how you actually spend your time at the Capitol? And are there emerging issues that might end up eclipsing everything else, in your opinion?
Yeah, I thought this was a really good question because it shows that, you know, as session moves, our priorities do shift a little depending on how bills are actually being received and which bills come up for hearing more quickly. And a great example of that is that mental health and substance use parity, which is something that has gotten some attention during the interim, and it was a topic area for the Select Committee on Mental Health. That was one of the very first mental health bills that came up in the House, and we were able to work on that bill, work on that topic area kind of as it came up. And we had been part of those conversations during the interim, but just an example that wasn't maybe our top priority, but because that came up first, that's where we've been spending our attention. So there are a lot of issues that are all vying for the legislators' attention. And so we really do have to kind of see what is moving and then focus on that. But, you know, criminal justice, there are several bills related to that, and mental health is woven in there. Same with child welfare. There's a lot of bills related to child protective services, as well as other topics. And mental health may not be the primary component, but we have to look at the bills and see if mental health is related in any way, and be prepared to answer any questions that folks may have about that.
Okay. And so what do you personally feel most passionate about? And how do you define success for yourself during the session? Because as an individual, it may not always be so easy to chart your own impact. And you kind of have to rely on just, you know, what friends and companions say. But
yeah, this is interesting. I think last session, especially as a staffer that was new to the policy world, I was very excited about working on specific bills, and I got very attached to the bills. And when bills that my boss had filed that I had worked on didn't pass, I was devastated. And I think I was really able to internalize that over the interim and really see that advocates work on these bills and work on these topic areas for months before the session even begins. So I think I've started to look at it in a different way now, where if a bill doesn't pass, I'm not as, I don't think I'll be as heartbroken, because I think there is incremental change even if bills don't pass. Sometimes agencies see things that advocates have brought up or that others have brought up during session and choose to act in that regard, even without legislative direction, if they are able to. Also, sometimes just saying certain things on the record and saying certain things in front of the right people can make a difference without actually having any legislation pass. But the one topic that I'm probably the most passionate about is really just access to services for all individuals with mental health concerns, not just folks that, you know, are in crisis or need the most dire of services, but people that you know, may from the outside seem just like you and me, but are really on the inside struggling with something and aren't able to get the help that they need. So that's why I'm really passionate about coverage for mental health and for parity for mental health conditions and treating those conditions as you would with physical conditions. So that's what I've really been focusing my time on as a policy fellow.
Okay. Allison, we are talking about the policy priorities of the Hogg Foundation. And as I indicated, That document is pretty easy to get to on our website at hog.utexas.edu. And we encourage everybody listening to find some means of tracking legislation as it moves through the House and Senate. There's so much information on how it is that you can be involved and stay abreast of the goings of the legislature. So we encourage everybody listening who may be interested, and not just about what the Hog Foundation is doing, to avail themselves of all available means of doing that. So, Allison, our policy fellow, thank you for taking the time to let us know what's happening.
Thanks, Ike. I'm happy to be here.
Greg Haunch is Public Policy Director for National Alliance on Mental Illness, or NAMI, of Texas. He joins us for an overview of the larger policy environment here in Texas and nationally. Greg, thank you for joining us.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
So, one thing I've learned in my time here at HOG is that there's no consensus on what a good enough mental health system would include, or even on what mental health is and whether it's something public policy can even deliver. And it's always sort of the elephant in the room whenever ideas pertaining to policy are being, you know, kicked around by people in that arena.
Mm-hmm.
Right. So, I mean, in your own opinion, as someone who works in the policy realm, what do citizens have a right to expect from public policy in this area?
Well, that's a good question. And it's a big question. You know, I think there's a lot that we should expect from our public policymakers on this issue. I think fundamentally, we should expect appropriate messaging from them. Their language should not be stigmatizing mental illness any further than it already is stigmatized.
Right.
They need to ensure that, you know, they're accurately portraying mental illness for what it is in their public comments on this issue. So I think that's, you know, an important first step in what we should expect from our decision makers. Outside of that, I mean, I think we need to be expecting them to provide for appropriate prevention measures. We need to ensure that those who need a diagnosis and who would benefit from a diagnosis are able to get that diagnosis, because that can be a very important first step in a person getting access to treatment. And that brings me to my next point, which is that obviously treatment is sort of a fundamental expectation when it comes to what our system of public policy should provide. And there's a lot that goes into sort of what an effective treatment system is and what it should be. I think the fundamental point here is that treatment should be individualized. There's no one size fits all approach to what treatment should be offered. So each person with a mental illness needs an individual treatment plan. And so that's an important component of an effective mental health system. And then, you know, there's outpatient services, inpatient, there are crisis services. There's a lot of different services that need to be offered. In addition to those core services, we need supportive services like housing and employment. Those have shown to be very critical for a person in helping them in their recovery.
Okay. And so what are, with you having just said that, what are some of your biggest hopes for this session that you are, even now as we speak, kind of hip deep in?
Yeah, we're right in the throes of it. We just hit midway point in the legislative session. I think we have reason to be hopeful about where we're at on mental health in this legislative session. Certainly hope that, obviously, we don't see any cuts to mental health funding. And we're hopeful that we can actually see an increased investment in mental health services in this session. We definitely have a need for additional capacity in our mental health system to be serving more people at the level that they need to be served. These services sometimes are not as robust as a person needs. So, you know, having an additional investment in our outpatient system, our inpatient system, would take us a long way. And then on top of that, you know, we hope to see some reform in the area of mental health parity. And we can talk a little bit more about that. But, you know, that can, the lack of mental health parity can be a big barrier to treatment. We're also very optimistic about the potential for targeted efforts to keep people with mental illness out of the criminal justice system, and get them into to the treatment and services, to keep them in the community whenever possible. And I, you know, that's a high policy priority for my organization. And we work every day to try to help the state of Texas put into place policies that would be effective in that goal of, you know, keeping people out of this highly restrictive setting that is not conducive to recovery, and getting them into the person-centered treatment plan that ultimately will help them in their recovery.
Okay. And so it seems, at least to an outsider, that that the issue of mental health has a certain momentum over the past few sessions.
Mm-hmm.
How would you assess where we're at, all things considered?
Well, I've been here in Texas since 2012. I think we've come a long way since then. And just knowing sort of the history of what happened before I arrived, you know, there were some, obviously there were concerns of advocates that were unaddressed. And going into that 2013 legislative session, we saw a bipartisan call for addressing the issue of chronically underfunding mental health services in our state. And we've on that particular issue, we've come a long way since then, both chambers and the governor recognizing that an increased investment is sorely needed in communities across our state. That being said, we still have a long way to go on mental health funding. We still, compared to other states, we're not even close to where we need to be. We also, you know, have made some progress on early intervention and prevention. We put some programs into place for children in schools. There needs to be more of an effort from local communities to be addressing mental illness early and often among young people. And one of those areas where we need to really pay a lot of attention to is young people experiencing a first episode of psychosis. Much of the time, there's a delay in any treatment whatsoever when a person goes into psychosis. And that has often the effect of the person dropping out of school, becoming unemployed. If we can intervene with a robust package of services, we see much better outcomes in the long run. So I think, you know, on early intervention and prevention, we still have a long way to go. Suicide prevention is another area where, you know, we're seeing rising rates of suicide in our state, and we're not doing enough to, you know, to be addressing that issue. One of the opportunities there is to ensure that every mental health professional goes through suicide prevention training, both initially and then on an ongoing basis.
Okay. And so where are you from, if you don't mind me asking?
I'm from the great state of New Jersey.
Really?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes, things are very different there. You know, I'm happy to be a Texan. And we have our work cut out for us here. So I think this is the place to be on mental health reform.
So your parent organization, NAMI, has taken what seemed to me to be a pretty strong stand on the Affordable Care Act repeal, or the efforts to repeal it,
mm-hmm.
still unfolding.
Mm-hmm.
And so what would you most like for Texans to know about what's at stake in the current national policy environment? You could probably speak at great length on that, but what you think is most pertinent,
yeah,
you know, through the whole thicket of rhetoric.
Well, there's a lot at stake here. There's no question about it. I think people with mental illness and family members and the mental health community at large needs to be engaged in these discussions. And we are. NAMI is, you know, on a very significant level. What we know about the current proposal on federal health care reform is that millions of people, in fact, tens of millions of people would lose mental health coverage over the next 10 years if this proposal goes through as written. It would make substantial changes to Medicaid. They're looking at a per capita cap on Medicaid, which would have the ultimate effect of Medicaid dollars, the allocation towards the state being substantially reduced, which means that less people get served and the services that are offered are less robust. And also it would be taking that option of of Medicaid expansion off the table. And that's something that we've been encouraging the state of Texas to do for a long time. We think that's it presents a significant opportunity to increase access to treatment and services. If we don't have that option anymore, then that means we continue with this status quo where far too many Texans are uninsured, with many, many of those Texans having a mental health condition. And so it makes it much less likely that a person gets access to treatment and services if they don't have coverage. For reasons like those, I think we have obvious concerns about this existing proposal. We're encouraging our membership to speak out against it, to ask their representatives in Congress to vote no on the proposal. And I believe actually that the House is expected to pick up this measure very soon, and hopefully they reject it.
Okay, Greg, there's almost too much for people to pay attention to. We still hope that they try anyway. Thank you so much for, taking time out of your busy schedule to give us some, additional needed context about what's at stake, for people who care about mental illness and all of the forces that are at play. We appreciate it.
Yeah, thank you for having me in. I'm a big fan of the podcast, and it's an honor to be a part of it.
Well, thank you. And that does it for this episode of Into the Fold. Before I go, there is a ton of information on Texas mental health policy that you can find on our website. In fact, in the main navigation at the top, you'll see a drop-down menu for Mental Health Guide. We have reproduced in web page form most of the content of our A Guide to Understanding Mental Health Systems and Services in Texas. If that sounds like a lot, it's because it is. In fact, it's as good a repository of general information about the state's mental health system as you'll find any place. And our guest for today, Allison Bolware, played a pretty crucial role in helping to compile it. So check it out. Share the information. Get informed. I'm Mike Evans. Thanks so much for joining us.